This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. A not unfamiliar voice on RÚV English Radio. I'm with Árni Pétur, who we last spoke to when he was looking after all the museums in Hafnarfjörður. But here we are on the other side of the country, in Neskaupstaður, in the east of Iceland, standing in another museum.
Yes, thank you. Hi. Yes, we are standing here in Safnahúsið in Neskaupstaður, or the Neskaupstaður House of Collections. And in here we have three different museums. We have the Tryggvi Ólafsson Art Collection, the Jósafat Hinriksson Maritime and Smithy Collection, and the East Icelandic Natural History Collection.
All in this building that we're in, all in this house. Now, we're going to hear at a later date, over the Christmas period, in fact, about the Tryggvi Ólafsson Art Collection, and there's a reason for that show happening over the Christmas period. But today, we're going to look at the Natural History Collection, which is downstairs from where we're standing, but first, the Jósafat Hinriksson Maritime and Smithy Museum, and there's a real maritime sense, isn't there, in the building that we're in here upstairs?
Yes, definitely. This building used to be called Hafnarhúsið, or the Harbour House, because it used to be a storage space for sailors here. And that is also how Jósafat Hinriksson himself started his career. He grew up in Neskaupstaður and he studied mechanics, or Vélstjórn in Icelandic. And he started working as a sailor here in Neskaupstaður, but then later on he got a job offer on a boat in Reykjavík, and so he moved down south. And then throughout the years there, he built up a large collection because as he grew older, he stopped working as a fisherman or sailor, and he started working more as a mechanic and inventor, and he had his own shop in Reykjavík where he had a lot of space. And so he started collecting all kinds of tools and artifacts about maritime history, as well as his own inventions, which we will talk about a bit later.
Yes, I'm curious to hear what he invented, but we're standing here at one of his workbenches, or at least a bench where there are lots of tools that he might have used. Tell us a little bit about some of these devices that are here.
Yeah, well, these are some of the standard tools used in most workshops. We have wrenches and hammers and tongs, as well as these, which were used both on metal and wood, because he worked a lot with wood in his shop during the earlier years. So from 1970 to maybe 1990.
Anyone, I guess, interested in DIY, interested in the history of making things and using the hands and, you know, exercising all the skills that I absolutely totally lack, is going to find this part of the museum quite fascinating, I think.
Yes, yes, definitely. And if we go over here, we will see even more tools.
Yes.
Because Jósafat was an avid collector. And this building, I believe this floor is about 200 square meters. It is filled with all kinds of tools and artifacts, but we have some 20 storage containers of more stuff in our collection that we might put up at some point.
But this wasn't all his stuff, or was it?
Well, he owned most of it.
Okay.
But he both worked as a sailor and with his workshop, but he also collected things from other sailors, other workers, and he tried to put together a whole collection to show the development of fisheries technology in Iceland.
When did he live?
He was born in he was born on June 27th, 1924. So he would have turned 100 last year. But he died around the turn of the century. So after that, his seven kids donated his collection to Fjarðabyggð. And then in 2007, it opened in this building alongside the other two collections we have here.
It is a vast collection. I mean, you're maybe not getting a sense of just how much space there is here, how much room there is here, and how it is filled with all of these fascinating pieces of machinery and barrels and nets that we can see here.
Yes. Because Josafat grew up in Neskostadur, and we are standing in Safnahúsið here by the harbor in Neskostadur, we have this exhibit on barrels, both the marking and branding of barrels and the uses of barrels, because during the earlier part of the 20th century, most people in Neskostadur worked around fisheries. Men were mostly sailors, women worked on shore, as in most other towns in Iceland, and they fished herring, and they spread it out around here, where the car park is now, to dry up and clean. And so now later, we have this collection here, and we wanted to honor the history of these people that came before us.
And was herring as important then to this town as it was to, say, Siglufjörður?
Yeah, well, that came a bit later, in the 1960s and 70s. But Neskostadur grew a lot. I don't think herring was as important to any town in Iceland as Siglufjörður. Mm. But the population in Neskostadur grew by the hundreds at the time. Yes. And we still haven't reached the height of the population that we had back then.
Yes. Well, you can see here with a couple of black and white images just how many people were employed in this industry. And as you said, the area that is now the car park, I think, outside the building that we're in, where I'm parked just now, in fact. Lots of women, and they are all women here, processing the catch. I mean, my goodness, you can smell the fish from that photo, can't you?
Yes, from the photo and also probably some of the artifacts that we have in here.
Yes.
But the main area for working the herring was in Síldarvinnslan, which is in the bottom of the fjord. Mm. And that is still the largest company in Neskostadur and has been for over half a century.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the location that we have here down by the shore in Neskostadur, and were we here on a slightly less grey day, we'd have a pretty staggering view of the water and of the fjord, and we can't really see very much today, but I guess some visitors, when they come here on a clear day, are as impressed by what they can see outside of the window.
Yes, definitely. The view from here and everywhere in Neskostadur is amazing.
It is.
You can see over to the other two fjords that separate from Norðfjörður, that is Hellisfjörður and Viðfjörður, and the mountains around here. They are absolutely gorgeous. And when people look out the window and to the left, they would see Rauðubjörg, which are hidden in the fog now.
Yeah, I'm taking your word for it today.
Yeah. And they are called Rauðubjörg,
yes.
Or the Red Cliffs. But they shine bright like the sun during the day over the summer.
Moving around on the second floor of the house, we see more items that really do talk about and explain and convey the importance of the sea, which we've just been discussing, to this part of East Iceland. Where would you want to take us next?
Well, we could stop by here because the sea was so important to people here in Neskostadur and everywhere in the east. But it was also very dangerous. And so we have a small exhibition about ocean faring safety, because there were all kinds of dangers. Ships could sink, of course, or turn over in bad weather. But they could also catch on fire out in the open or be stranded during a storm, like Goðin. Was stranded in Vöðlavík in 1994, and Goðin itself was a rescue ship that had just finished rescuing another ship called Bergvik Vaf-E. And so then Goðin stranded during the night, and the conditions were horrible. There was barely any visibility, maybe 400 meters. It was raining. There were 20 meters a second. It was cold. And luckily, the strip stranded in such a way that the house on top of it stood just above the ocean.
Okay.
But the sailors on Guovin, they had to wait for hours while helicopters from the American airbase in Keflavik flew all the way to the east, and they almost turned around. And the only reason that they didn't turn around was because one of the pilots was a higher up in the American military.
Okay. So that answers the question, who rescues the rescue ship, to an extent?
Yes, and then who rescues the rescuers when they get in trouble? Because those helicopters, they then had trouble because they were going to fly to Egilsstaðir, but they had to almost turn around, but they couldn't see anything. And they got lost over Mjóafjörður. But then finally, they saw some lights, and they flew towards the lights and landed. And that was in the car park right outside here.
The area around where I'm standing just now, again, some of the dangers that you maybe don't associate with being on a ship, such as fire. When you look at the vast expanse of water outside of the window, it's not fire that you're thinking of, particularly on a damp day like today. But here's some breathing apparatus, for example, that might have to be used in the event of a fire on board, and fire extinguishers, and of course, life belts as well. And being involved with the sea, whether it's in fishing or any other sort of nautical activity, particularly in a country like Iceland, it's a dangerous, dangerous activity, isn't it?
Yes. And it used to be that dozens of people died at sea every year. Luckily, that has gone swiftly down.
Yes.
In the last couple of decades. And so now it's only a couple of people a year at best.
There is some rather old radio equipment here that would have been used for ship to shore, I guess, to keep communications active. I mean, technology's improved a great deal in that respect as well, but these are the big heavy machines that would have been used to maintain those vital communications.
Yes, in the second half of the 20th century, but we also have some collections about navigating before that. Mm. We have sextants.
Yes.
And also we have an old barometer that the brothers Bull, who had a whaling station in Hellisfjörður in the 19th century, donated to the people of Norðfjörður for their safety. Mm. And there's a funny story about a man who started out believing in the barometer because he was a man of science, but he was also a sailor. And so one day, when the barometer said that going out to fish wasn't safe, he didn't go. But everyone else went, and they fished a lot. And so the day after, he thought, this barometer, it's not working. It's bullshit. And so he went out, even though it was saying that the conditions were very dangerous. Mm. But no one else went out because they simply looked up in the sky and saw that it was dark gray. And so he went out, he didn't fish anything, he almost drowned and came back, and he punched the barometer. And so now when you look at it, it still has the crack over the front of it.
So if anyone's wondering why there is a crack in the front of the barometer, it's because it was physically struck by that individual. So we have a lot going on in this building, as we say. There's the Maritime and Smithy Museum, the Josefat Hringsson Maritime and Smithy Museum, the part of the house that we're in just now. Mm-hmm. On that, you said, I think he had 7 children.
Yes.
What do they make of what's been done with his collection? What do they think of it?
Well, from what I hear, I haven't spoken to them personally, because I just arrived here from Hafnarfjörður.
Yes.
This year. I believe that they're quite happy because quite a lot of work has been put into this museum, because it is quite large and it has so many sections. It has a section on safety, it has a section on fishing, herring. Mm. It has art pieces, like the one hanging in front of us.
Yeah, so tell us about this, because there are lots of pieces, heavy pieces of metal hanging from the ceiling here, very artfully arranged. What are these items?
Yes, these are called trissur in Icelandic, and they were used to levy ropes around.
Okay.
There's probably some great word for it in English, but I'm I'm not familiar
I'm
with
struggling
it.
To think what it might be, but that probably means that I don't know terribly much about the sea. But yes, these are devices that you would use, as you say, to wrap up ropes, I suppose. Yes. And they're all hanging in a way that's obviously been, as you say, artistically designed.
Yes, because sometimes when you work in museums, you end up with a lot of similar things. Mm. But you can't show everything, and you can't show 15 examples of the same thing. But here, we have some 50 or 60 items that are quite similar, but they are all different. Mm. And so when people come, they can walk around and look at these hanging trissur and see the differences. Some of them are smaller than a fist.
Yes.
Others are larger than a baby.
And would all have been essential in their day to help with that particular task.
Yes.
Let us move round to where we came in on this, the second floor of the house.
Yeah.
What do people think when they see this, when they know that the sea is important to Iceland and this part of Iceland, but they get this close and personal to this machinery?
Well, people find it very interesting, and especially because Josef had this fascination with everything about the sea. It wasn't just the anchors or just the fishing hooks, but everything. And he even tinkered a lot himself, and he invented, for example, trawl doors for trawlers that were a great improvement on the old equipment, and he kept improving it over the years. He went from making them out of wood and a bit of steel, and then slowly the wood rotted away or broke down because the conditions here are so harsh in Icelandic waters. So his trawl doors that he made here, they lasted about 2 years on Icelandic ships. But then when he started selling them abroad, he sold them to China, America, Denmark, Germany, Britain, Scotland, a lot of places.
Yes.
They lasted about 10 to 15 years in calmer waters.
Because the weather here in the east, for about 2 months in the summer, you can get the hottest, calmest, sunniest weather in Iceland. And then during the winters, or even in the autumn and the spring, you can be absolutely battered by some really severe conditions.
Yes. And the autumn and spring are not worse times for fishing. There are certain species that you can only catch in the autumn, for example.
Yes.
And so as time went on, Josef had constantly improved his methods, and he ended up making his trawl doors only out of steel, which was quite fitting because his father, Hinrik Sveinsson, he used to be a blacksmith. And so when they moved to Norðfjörður in the first decade of the 20th century, his father, Hinrik, he built his own smithy, which is why this is the Maritime and Smithy Collection.
And this is where we came in, but right at the entrance, we went round the other way. This is the smithy into which you can walk. And again, you get a sense of the work that would have been undertaken here with lots of heavy pieces of metal. Once again, there's a furnace here, if that is the right word, I think, that would have been used for smelting, and a vice clamp to the table. And again, the age of these pieces, it's surprising they haven't rusted away entirely to nothing, because these are pretty old tools here.
Yeah, well, the best way to conserve most items is to keep using them. Apart from paper, which breaks down quite easily, old tools, old buildings, old boats, they are best conserved when in use. So, for example, the smithy that Hinrik built, it still stands in the valley here. And now it's just used as a storage yet.
Okay.
But it is obviously outside of the avalanche guards that keep us safe here in the village. But it is quite safe to be in that building, because if you look around here, how many corners do you see on the building?
How many corners? One, two, three, four, five.
Five.
Five. Okay, yeah. I counted that one twice.
Yeah. And normally, buildings only have four corners.
Yes.
at least back in the day. But this one has 5 corners, and that's because Hinrik built his smithy with a corner facing up into the mountains to break up avalanches as they came down.
And they would split.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because buildings in Norðfjörður and elsewhere in Iceland used to be regularly washed away in the avalanches.
Yes.
Like we saw just, 2 years ago here in Neskaupstaður.
Yes, that is the downside, of course, of living next to such staggering scenery. If your home is at the bottom or on the side of one of these incredible hills, then you are regrettably at greater risk of avalanche. But of course, all kinds of things have been done to try to minimize the damage that that can cause. So that is just one of the 3 attractions here in this house, the Josefat Hringsson Maritime and Smithy Museum. As I say, there are 2 other museums here, the Tryggvi Olafsson Art Collections. We're going to hear about those in a future show. But let us move upstairs, I think you said, to the Natural History Collection. So this does take us to the top floor.
Yes. And up here we have the Natural History Collection of East Iceland, which doesn't really have a special focus. We kind of do everything. We have exhibitions on cliff birds, on moors and ponds, and the animals that live there, both birds and foxes and mice. Mm. We have an exhibition about birds that fly down to the warmer countries during the summer, mm-hmm. on fish, on eggs, on insects, on rocks and minerals.
But the first thing you see, because we are in East Iceland, is the reindeer.
Yes. And I think most museums in Iceland should have a reindeer because they are so special to the East.
And we've covered this before, I think, on Roof English Radio, but they only live in the East, don't they?
Yes. There are about 3,500 reindeer living in the East. And they don't really go further than Vatnajökull. Because they really like to eat some special kinds of mosses, and they only grow in the East.
And this one is very lifelike. I keep expecting it to start moving towards me.
Yeah, it is very cute. And we have kind of taken up the tradition of letting people pet the reindeer, because kids really like it, because it's so cute. And so if you want, you can pet the reindeer.
Okay, I've got to pet the stuffed reindeer. And it really does look so convincingly alive. It's been very well captured, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So that is the reindeer, which has a particular importance in East Iceland, as we've talked about before. As you said, all kinds of natural life is represented here. Eggs of all different sizes and shapes from various birds.
Yes, and we have in our collection eggs from every bird that lays eggs in Iceland.
Wow.
Not every egg is shown, simply because some of them aren't fit for exhibition. They crack easily or such. But here, people can come here and see both the birds and the eggs, and also learn about the eggs, because bird eggs, they are not all made equal.
No, some are tiny. So the bird, the egg of the wren, for example, or the meadow pipit, are both absolutely tiny. And then you go all the way up to the whooper swan, which is, what, about 3 times the size of a hen's egg, I would say.
Yes, and also when you look at them, some of them are very pointy, but others are very round. And the pointy ones, they are more made to lay in a nest out in the open, but the ones that are more egg-shaped, so for example, like a chicken egg, they are actually more designed by nature to stay still on tall cliffs by the ocean in the winds without rolling away.
Evolution is an incredible thing, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Some of these eggs are plain, some are speckled and brown. Is there an evolutionary purpose to that as well, I guess, camouflage?
Yes, when you look at them, you see, for example, spói and hrossakökur in Icelandic, which are snipe and whimbrel in English. They are earth-like in nature, grey, brown, green, while some other larger birds that might not need to hide their eggs or can defend them, like swans or larger geese or eagles, they have white eggs.
Yes, I mean the swan's egg is both giant and plain. That's a confident bird.
Yes.
No fear of the egg being stolen here. We've got a giant tableau in front of us, giving us a sense of just the diversity of animal in this part of the country. An Arctic fox there?
Yes, there's quite a lot of Arctic foxes around here. And up into the northeast, like Melrakka Sleta, which is named for them. Then we also have a baby reindeer here.
Mm.
We actually have three reindeers here on the floor. The fully grown one, this baby one, and then a pickled fetus over there.
Okay. How would the Arctic fox and the baby reindeer get on if they were actually next to each other and living?
Well, I'm just a historian, so I'm going to guess that they would not get along, but
no.
I don't think that the fox would be able to catch the baby reindeer as long as it would be with its parents.
I think they'd both be nervous of each other, because the Arctic fox, although it is a fox, it is quite a timid creature, isn't it?
Yes, and small.
And small, yes. Geologically, of course, there is much to discuss in Iceland at any given time, but lots of different stones here, lots of different rocks. We're not terribly far from Petra Stone Collection, which is an iconic site in the east, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. And that is why we have done more with our animals and fish and birds, but we still have this quite large mineral collection, and we have just about every mineral that can be found in Iceland. But we have focused quite a lot on Icelandic spar, or Silverberg,
okay,
because it is one of the icons of East Iceland. It can be found in quite a lot of places here. For example, Helgustaðanáma in Eskifjörður.
It is a light-coloured, light brown-coloured rock. It is almost transparent. Very beautiful.
Yes, and when it has been refined, it can be used in quite a lot of scientific and medical research,
okay,
because it has a double light reflection, and that is why during the latter decades of the 19th century, Helgustaðanáma was almost emptied, and the spar there was sold abroad.
Because the light that shines through it, if we hold up to the light there, it's letting through about as much light as a cloudy ice cube that you take from your freezer. So it's letting some through.
Yes, but then after putting it through a refining process, it gets quite a lot cleaner. So so if we look over here, we can see that there is a lot of light coming through it.
Yes,
and it has two focal points, one down there and one up there, from my point of view. And so it's very interesting for people who come here to hold one of the pieces that we have lying around. Don't steal them.
I'll give you this one back.
Yes, thank you. And turn them around, put them up to the light, put them up to the window, and look at how the light goes through them.
Very beautiful, but also, as you say, it has a useful and has useful scientific purposes as well. So worthy of its place in this collection. But you said that pretty much all of the minerals that you can find in Iceland are represented here. I mean, no one's going to be surprised to find basalt and red scoria, which have these holes been made because this is volcanic?
Yes.
Yeah.
When the lava comes out, it doesn't settle immediately. And so it gets more light.
We've touched already on the importance of the sea in East Iceland. Here are just some of the fish and some of the sea life that can be found in the waters of East Iceland.
Yes. We have most of the fish that is fished in Icelandic waters. Sadly, we don't have herring or mackerel, which is kind of our which is kind of ironic given that the Síldarvinnslan, which mostly fishes herring and mackerel, is located about 2 kilometers away. but hopefully at some point. But then we have some more interesting things. We have a baby seal. We have a hooded seal, which is one of those seals that has a red balloon on its nose that it uses to orient itself in water. We have a salmon that was the second largest ever caught when it was caught back in the 80s. It is not the second largest ever caught anymore.
But that was a story that someone had for a long time they were proud of.
Yes, and quite a few salmons, because it was caught by a trawler. And so everyone on board got the honor together. And so maybe to stop fighting about who caught it, they donated it to the museum.
And it must be about a meter long.
Yes, we have the measurements on the wall. I'm gonna
check. Well, that was my guess. Let's see exactly what it comes in at. It's longer.
It is 1 meter 20 centimeters and 22 kilos.
Wow. Caught very close to here in 1986, as you say.
Yeah.
And donated by the crew of the boat from which it was caught.
Yes. And to finish off in here, because we have both items behind glass and items that people could touch without stealing anything, because when you look at the hooded seal, you see that its balloon is not there anymore.
Oh.
Yeah. There's just a hole in its head, sadly. But looking to the left, you will see an alligator, because there is a story that some years ago, someone brought an alligator with them.
Oh, there it is. I've just seen it.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a story that some years ago, someone brought an alligator with him home and kept it alive in a river down in the valley.
Okay.
And so the story goes that after that alligator died, it was donated here. This one is made of plastic, but it could be that it is in storage.
It's also quite small, isn't it?
It is. It is very small.
Yeah. And again, you'd struggle to put the alligator on a list of creatures native to Iceland, I suppose, wouldn't you? We'll finish by looking at some shells. And again, a real variety here. Some of them are absolutely tiny. These are seashells that you would find on the shore here?
Yes, both here and around the country. Because the Natural History Collection is quite old. It was founded in 1965. Mm-hmm. And so people, both people who worked for the museum, volunteers, and also people from Náttúrustofa Östurland, or the East Iceland Nature Institute, have put in a lot of work to collect almost every shell.
I mean, some, for example, here, Hrukubulda, almost invisible to the native, absolutely tiny. There's even smaller ones here, Silkinota. These are the results of some very dedicated searches then by people who really knew what they were looking for.
Yes, some of them, of course, are found by just going with a net down to the beach and dragging it through. But then there are amazing research projects going on in Náttúrustofa Östurlands, where they are looking at sea animals and also birds, land animals, and plants throughout the whole of East Iceland.
Okay. So if somebody wants to see all of this, and bear in mind there's a third element to the house that we're in, which we are going to talk about in a future show, but if somebody wants to come along and explore this museum, when are you open?
All of our museums, except the French Museum in Fáskrúðsfjörður, are open from June 1st to August 30th every year. And outside of that, people can get in contact on the email address sopn@fjardabygd.is, and we can organize a time together to look at the museums.
So that is possible outside of the summer period. Okay, well, we'll put a link up to that, of course, on the page accompanying the show from Roof English Radio. You and I are going to be traveling around a lot of the museums of the municipality, you mentioned one of them there, of course, the French House, which I think is going to be particularly interesting to a lot of people. The third part of this house, the third museum that is in this house, is something that we're going to take a look at over the festive period. That's the Tryggvi Olafsson art collection. It's also part of the building that we're standing in for now. Arni Petter, thank you very much.
Thank you too.
And we'll talk again very soon. It's Roof English Radio. My name's Darren Adam, and you can get in touch anytime. We're english@ruv.is.
There's more from Roof English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Roof English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Roof.